You guys are my number one. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast, where we are all about cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. My name is Zach Brooks, and I am joined by...
Alf Sinensky.
And Brendan Fitzpatrick.
And tonight, we got a special wingman in the house. We had to call the number one Top Gun fan that we knew, and that is our buddy from D.C., Frank Conkle. The man who, every time we go to like an 80s concert, he's always dressed up as characters from Top Gun. So as soon as we started talking about watching Top Gun this week, I was like, we got to call this guy. So welcome, Frank. How you doing?
Happy to be you guys' wingman today. A lot of thoughts on Top Gun. It's been one of my favorite movies since I was a little kid. And then we can even talk about the first time we watched it. But super excited to join in the discussion.
Sweet. Yeah. So last week we talked about Witness, and due to an actor connection, Kelly McGillis is in both movies. We will be discussing Top Gun. Then at the end of the episode, we're going to discuss suggestions from the listeners and from us for a movie that somehow connects to Top Gun that we will watch next week. So we'll be picking from those suggestions what we're going to watch next week. We will be spoiling Top Gun throughout this podcast. So if you haven't seen it, you can pause the podcast. You can go watch Top Gun on Amazon Prime or also for rental. And if you just want to skip ahead to the latter discussion to hear what we're going to be watching next week, I'll put a timestamp into the description of this podcast and you can jump ahead to that. But of course, we always say you should just pause the podcast, go watch the movie, come back and listen. And as always, you can submit your feedback, ratings, questions, comments to @LadderMovie. On Letterboxd and Twitter, or you can email us, themovieladder@gmail.com. Once we do pick our movie for next week, you can send in your thoughts on that and next movie connection to those spots. All right, guys. How's everybody doing? How's everybody's weeks?
Not bad. Not much going on here in D.C. other than, you know, everybody preparing themselves for what seems to be the end of the world in one way, shape, or form or the other. But, not too bad. Spent a lot of time in the last few days watching movies and trying to catch up on TV and podcasts. And it's sort of content overload right now out there in the world. But trying to wade my way through it as best I can. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I watched a ton of movies this week. Lots of action movies this weekend for me, actually. So, how about you? How are things in your neck of the woods?
Things are good. We're getting ready, hopefully, for school to start. And hoping that goes well, because a lot depends on it, both financially, sanity-wise, all sorts of ways. So just crossing our fingers and hope that goes well, because there's lots of ways that it could go poorly.
Yeah, they just announced today that Michigan State is going completely virtual, and they're telling people not to move back to East Lansing, don't move back into the dorms. So, 2 weeks before school is set to start, plans are changing.
I think we're going to be seeing a lot of that the next couple of weeks with different universities, especially after what seemed to be the rager of the century over at UNC, right, Frank?
Yeah. I wonder if they'll give some of these kids a tuition discount.
Oh, no. They brought up, they brought it back, they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to have school, get you guys all to sign your leases and pay full tuition, and then actually, no, we're going to change that.
It's a sad time to be a college student right now.
That does suck. I was thinking, too, if you were like a senior in high school last year, you missed out on prom, you missed out on graduation, and that stuff, looking back.
Just being a senior, which is just the first time that you kind of start feeling like an adult.
True. Yeah.
Or even
it's some good movies that come out of this, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you just took out loans too before all this happened, right, to pay for your tuition. Like, you might not have to start paying those off right away, but you're still going to have to pay those off. Those loans aren't going to be forgiven, and they're for a lot more than just doing classes online.
Yeah. I mean, there's been so many ramifications, but, getting back to Top Gun, this was supposed to be when Top Gun 2, right, the sequel, was supposed to be released this summer, and now that's been delayed another full year.
It's coming out next year? Because I know it was Christmas for a while.
Yeah, they had it pushed back till the end of the year, and then now it's like July of 21 now, unfortunately. Wow.
Yeah, because I think initially this came up on the podcast, and we were thinking about trying to get to this around the time Maverick would have come out, and now, that time has come and gone, because it was originally supposed to be around 4th of July, right?
Yep. Sad. That's going to be a sweet summer. And now, nope.
No movies at all. And Frank, what are you doing these days? So how are you keeping yourself busy?
Lately,
besides watching Top Gun.
Yeah, which I rewatched again today during work hours just to catch up. Been doing a lot of this last 5 days. I was actually up in upstate New York by Lake Placid doing some hiking, a little bit of light mountain climbing with some friends and catching some fresh air. And then I've been going back and forth between northern Michigan, where my folks have a house up there, and then Arlington, Virginia. When, you know, we've been work remote for going on 6 months now, probably all the way through next year, like probably a lot of you guys. So just trying to stay active outside as much as I can and not get COVID-19.
Smart.
Yeah. Doing my best.
Yeah. Well, lots of time to be outside right now instead of watching movies. But as we like to start these podcasts off, what is the best movie that you guys have seen in the last week? Frank, I know we kind of dumped this on you. Have you watched any other movies besides Top Gun this week that you want to talk about?
Well, it was kind of funny. As we were talking about this, I did watch Raiders of the Lost Ark, which you guys coincidentally did a podcast on not too long ago.
Yeah.
And that is an all-time classic. I almost wish I was a guest on that one too, just because so many memories. That was like our family trilogy movie, especially with my dad growing up. And Harrison Ford, badass at 40 and starting out in those movies, man. I mean, he did not look it. And
he's still flying planes and living that action-packed lifestyle even now.
Yeah, all-time classic for me. I love those movies. I probably would even put him over Star Wars in my personal, you know, ranking list, but.
Well, and you know, if people ever ask you to connect your two favorite movies, you can connect Raiders of the Lost Ark to Top Gun in just two moves, because Harrison Ford is in Witness with Kelly McGillis. Kelly McGillis is in Top Gun. So
that's 80s classics. That's all I would say too.
Yeah, that too.
Bring me back.
How about you? I'm hoping that you're going to talk about the movie that I think you're going to talk about as your best movie of the week.
Well, I'm torn between two, because I had one all lined up, and then I watched a movie last night that I kind of want to talk about because a lot of people are talking about it, and that is Boys State. Not Boise State, Boys State. It's a documentary that was just released this past weekend, I believe, on Apple Plus, which is Apple's new streaming service. So here's a trick. You can sign up for a 7-day free trial on Apple Plus, and you can watch this along with anything else that you may have been considering. And what Boys State is, it's a documentary about this program that I had never heard of. It's this, I think it's like an annual program where they bring together people from, I think, all over Texas and maybe from some other places too. And they come for like a weekend or 5 days or whatever it is. And they kind of do like a mock government, where they split up all the kids into two teams, basically two political parties, for lack of a better word. And they have to, you know, go through a nominating process and pick people that are going to be, you know, the state party chair and the attorney general, and then ultimately the governor, which is the highest office up for grabs in this like little kind of high school. It's kind of like Model UN, if you ever did that when you were younger, just more like local government. And they have like incredible access to these kids over the course of a few days. The reason why they actually did this is because in the previous year, the convention delegates had voted to secede from the United States. So like that kind of became like this national news flashpoint of, you know, kids in Texas is trying to secede from the union, as if like this is like a binding thing. And it's just like a really interesting look, like kind of like behind the scenes of these kids' lives and kind of their perspective on politics, but it in a lot of ways really mirrors a lot of what's going on with the adults, or, you know, I don't know if they're all adults, but you know what I mean, the real politicians and kind of the issues that they deal with and the tactics that they use. They do like confessionals with the different kids, like kind of reality TV style. So it's like, it's almost like a 2-hour season long episode of Survivor, kind of, because it's like they're all competing to like try to be like the governor of Texas at the end, and they kind of have to make deals with each other and lobby each other and get people to support them, and ultimately one of the kids is going to be declared the governor of Texas at the end of this 4-day weekend. And it's just I just found it it was a really easy watch. There's two or three kids that just like really shine through on TV that just like you can't believe how mature they are. And there's also a good amount of ugliness that kind of really mirrors some of the stuff we see every day in our own politics. So I think it's like really a worthwhile watch for almost anyone, unless you just like can't stand the thought of much of these days.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about this. I think Big Picture Podcast just covered it. I think Film Spotting talked about it last week. So I hadn't heard anything about it until like 2 days ago. Thanks. And probably because it's on Apple Plus.
Yeah,
so,
it's been on my radar for a couple of months as one of the most anticipated films from Film Spotting and a couple other lists. So it's been on my watch list for a little while, and I've been excited to watch it. But then I did have trouble. I did try to find a way to watch it over the weekend and couldn't get it through Apple. So I might have to figure out some other way to do it, but I do want to watch it. Definitely.
So. Yeah, I'll have to. Is it long?
2 hours.
It's like an hour 50. Yeah.
Okay.
But it moves. It's really entertaining because like you kind of just like dropped into it, and there's a little bit of an element to it of like where I kept thinking like, but like this isn't real, so like who cares? It's just like kids, and which is like kind of the way I always feel like when people try to make too big of a deal of like things that kids in high school do, because like kids in high school do stupid things all the time, and like that's just part of growing up. But you know, it is definitely revelatory in certain ways that I think were really interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is Boys State, and it's on Apple Plus. So I'm gonna try to find it this week, watch it. So, all right, Brendan, how about you?
Yeah. So I guess the best movie I watched a few movies over the weekend. The best movie I saw, and this is probably the artsiest thing I'm ever going to recommend, but it's incredible. So I watched a movie called The 400 Blows by Francois Truffaut. It's a 1959 movie in black and white, completely in French with English subtitles, about basically a young juvenile delinquent who continues to get in trouble with his parents, with the law, with his school. And it follows his journey as he continues to try to do the right thing and be a good kid, but continues to put himself in circumstances where he constantly is getting in trouble, whether it's with his parents, with the school, or with authorities. And I won't spoil the end of it, but it ends in a very, I guess it's a very formulaic film, as it has a beginning, middle, and end of, you can see where this arc is going to go. And the entire time you're rooting for the arc not to end in the way it does. And it just, you know, it pretty much follows a very traditional arc of a young man's coming of age.
It's got a very famous shot towards the end, right?
Yeah, it does. It has a couple of very famous shots. And it's a really good movie. It's only about an hour and a half, a little over an hour and a half. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It moved very fast. And I watched it on Criterion. I'm putting that Criterion subscription to good use, finally. And the way I got there was the night before I watched Killing of the Sacred Deer from Yorgos Lanthimos, and it's hard to say that I liked that movie, because it's a very hard movie to like while you can appreciate it and what he did. But I took the adolescent journey of the young troubled youth in that to the young troubled youth in this for my personal movie ladder. Yeah. So, but definitely recommend 400 Blows. I don't know if I can recommend Killing of the Sacred Deer, even though it is a good movie.
It's very disturbing.
It's very disturbing.
It's super disturbing.
But yeah, what about you? What have you
watched? Yeah. So, and Frank, just for some context. So the idea behind this podcast of the movie ladder came from something Brennan and I both did last year, which is we basically would like kept a list of movies and we would watch a movie and then we would watch another movie that's somehow related to it. It started something I did because I saw Bohemian Rhapsody. And after I saw Bohemian Rhapsody, everybody's like, oh, if you've seen Bohemian Rhapsody, you should really watch Dewey Cox, Walk Hard. Because, you know, like they just make fun of that whole format of these music biopics. And so then I watched that. And then after I watched Walk Hard, I was like, oh, I'd never seen Walk the Line, which is the movie that's parodying. So then I watched Walk the Line. And I was like, well, what if I just keep doing this and just keep like a running list of movies that I've watched in a row that are connected to the last movie. And so we turned that into this podcast. And Brennan and I both keep our own personal movie ladders as well. So Brendan watched Killing a Sacred Deer and 400 Blows on his movie ladder. And this weekend I knocked out a whole bunch of movies on my movie ladder. So I had been watching a bunch of Spike Lee movies. I had recently watched Inside Man was the last Spike Lee one that I watched, and then I watched Devil in a Blue Dress because that had Denzel Washington playing a detective. And then I followed along into Unstoppable, which is Denzel Washington playing a train conductor. But the movie I want to talk about was the next movie I watched in that list, and that was Enemy of the State, which is from 1998. And it is a great action movie starring – it's like a government conspiracy spy movie starring Will Smith and Gene Hackman. And like it has an amazing cast. It has so many like that guy people, and it has Jack Black in it, Jamie Kennedy, like lots of like smaller 90s actors all in the same movie together. And yeah, I had seen Enemy of the State when I was probably 12 years old, 15 years old. Back when I was in high school, and it was just like a fun action movie. But now watching it 20 years later, it's really cool how it's still pretty timeless in terms of like the ideas that it talks about. And it, you know, came out before 9/11, but like just has some weird things. Like they talk about the villain's birthday, and his birthday was September 11th, 1940. Like this is before 9/11 happened, and they just happened to say that the villain was born on 9/11. Very fun movie. It's on – where did I watch it? I think I watched it on HBO.
HBO, yeah.
So, yeah, if you haven't gone back to Enemy of the State, it's action-packed. It's, it's Will Smith doing movie star Will Smith. And, and it was directed by Tony Scott, too. So, what was that?
I said what he was best at. Exactly. Action Will Smith was the best Will Smith.
Right. 90s Will Smith. You know, this is around the time so I watched Bad Boys next after this. So.
Oh, class. That's a class.
Also, yeah, I almost picked Bad Boys. Bad Boys also really holds up. It's a lot of fun, too.
So. A lot of those late 90s movies, like hero movies. I was thinking of Fifth Element, too. I watched that a couple weeks back.
That's great.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
But they don't make them like that anymore.
No, I do think the late 90s in terms of action. I was thinking about that, too. Like The Rock and Face Off. Bad Boys and Enemy of the State. Like there were such good just straight up action movies in the 90s, and I just don't feel like we get action movies like that come out now. They're all, you get that in like things that are superhero movies and intellectual property that already exists, but in terms of just like straight up, like you said, hero action movies, it's a good way to describe it.
Mm-hmm, I agree. The Marvel changed the game for these kind of action movies. Now it's not as campy as it used to be, which I kind of appreciated. But
An Enemy of the State actually would have been. I was like, I could have just connected to Top Gun from Enemy of the State because that is also directed by Ridley Scott or Tony Scott. And Tony Scott, of course, is the director of Top Gun. And I think there were some other people on the crew that were in both movies, and I'm not sure if there's any cast crossover.
Not off the top of my head
Enemy of the State, it's a good one to go back to. I think it's very fun. Av, I don't know if you've, I know Brendan's seen it. Av, have you seen Enemy of the State?
Yeah, I saw it back when it came out, but all I remember is it being just very paranoia filled, and Will Smith is really good.
Yeah. One thing I will say, now that I've seen this movie after
I remember liking it.
Yeah. One thing I will say, after seeing The Conversation, which has Gene Hackman in it. So Gene Hackman, like, there's like a fan theory that Gene Hackman is basically playing the same character, like an older version of the character from The Conversation. But it goes actually more than that, because The Conversation I highly recommend if you've never seen that. But there is a scene in Enemy of the State where they're monitoring Will Smith at like a statue in D.C. And it is straight up the exact same scene as the opening scene from The Conversation. And it made me like so excited when I saw that, because it's something I definitely didn't catch when I saw this the first time. So, if you've never seen The Conversation, check that out. Francis Ford Coppola. It's about a guy who just like listens. He's like a spy and he listens to people and he goes paranoid by the end. It's from 1974. Also streaming on Amazon Prime, also on Canopy. So highly recommend The Conversation, even though that's not what I watched this week. So. All right, well, with that, from one Tony Scott movie to another, it's time to talk about Top Gun. So this was Jeff's suggestion last week. And good job, Jeff. He was very excited.
Thank you, Jeff.
when his movie got picked. Brendan, I think you said, what is this, 4 listener movies suggestions in a row?
Movie listener suggestion in a row.
Wow.
So congratulations, listeners. You're killing it.
Yeah, we're a podcast of the people, for sure.
We are now a podcast of the people.
Yeah. So what? So Witness, we had Top Gun, Witness, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Citizen Kane. Was there one before
Kane,
Citizen
Raiders,
Newsies Raiders, was Kane. Before Citizen Kane. I don't know who suggested that. I think that was you, Zach.
Yeah, I think Newsies was mine.
So it's Citizen Kane, Raiders, Witness, Top Gun. So
okay. Cover. Nice.
And then the last one before that was Waiting for Guffman. So
yeah.
We had Molly's pick of that 2 weeks off, and then the listeners came back strong.
Yeah. So, well, Top Gun, I had a lot of fun watching this movie. Of course, you know, if you've never seen Top Gun, it's from 1980, six. Off the top of my head, 88?
Came out my birthday 86. Weekend, 1986.
Oh, nice. Starring Tom Cruise, but handful of other 80s stars, including Kelly McGillis, who was in both Top Gun and Witness, directed by the aforementioned Tony Scott. So, he's directed a lot of action movies as well, a couple that I actually watched this weekend. And it's about a bunch of Navy pilots in a flight training school, and they just kind of about them being in the school and training for an eventual threat that they have to overcome at the end. And Frank, why don't you just tell us a little bit more about Top Gun? Like, what, you know, you don't have to get, you can give your thoughts, but, you know, like, intro Top Gun for us.
Well, Top Gun to me is probably the first movie I watched that was a true pop culture juggernaut. I mean, it's exceptionally entertaining, you know, especially for the young male demographic, I think, that it really targeted. But it had that sort of mix of like ultra machismo, but then like totally homoerotic undertones throughout the movie.
Oh yeah, we'll get to that.
And I think
we need to talk about that stuff a little bit.
Oh, for sure.
I've never seen Top Gun before, so
this is Av's first time seeing it. He's the only
blindsided Av with this one.
And I think it's probably for some folks of a certain millennial generation, it might be the most quotable movie of all time too. I mean, you know, there's not many professions that are cooler than being a pilot. I think it's a really interesting movie. When it came out in the 80s, it was kind of the reverse of a lot of military themed movies that had been critical of the military. This was sort of a pro-military, pro-patriot type movie that came out in the Reagan administration and, you know, just took everything to an 11. And can't think of a better date movie. Had plenty of experiences with this movie.
Do you think this is a good date movie?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, I could see how this gets the juices flowing.
Yeah, I just feel like you'd be compared to all the shirtless pilots, and I am not that.
Because, I mean, it is underneath it all, it is 100% also a love story, not just between Kelly McGillis and Tom Cruise, but between the Meg Ryan character and Goose, and also between Val Kilmer and Tom Cruise, to a degree.
All right. Okay, so should we just get right to that? Because
Let's get to it. All right,
so I had this saved. So this is actually from somebody else's Letterboxd review, and I didn't know about this, but so Quentin Tarantino's character in the movie Sleep With Me has a monologue all about Top Gun, and I think I have heard this referenced, and I'm just going to read it. And so he has a whole theory on Top Gun, and this is what Quentin Tarantino's character Sid says. He says, "Top Gun is fucking great. What is Top Gun? You think it's a story about a bunch of fighter pilots. It is a story about a man's struggle with his own homosexuality. It is. That is what Top Gun is about, man. You've got Maverick, all right. He's on the edge, man. He's right on the fucking line, all right? And you've got Iceman and all of his crew. And they're gay. They represent the gay man, all right? And they're saying, go the gay way. Go the gay way. He could go both ways. Kelly McGillis? She's heterosexuality. She's saying, no, 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 go the, quote, normal way. Play by the rules. Go the normal way. They're saying, no, go the gay way. Be the gay way. Go for the gay way, all right? That is what's going on throughout this whole movie. He goes to her house, all right? Looks like they're going to have sex. You know, They're just kind of sitting back. He's taking a shower and everything. Although I don't think he actually took a shower. And they don't have sex. He gets on the motorcycle, drives away, and she's like, what the fuck? What the fuck is going on here? This is way more explicit than this podcast usually.
See, you have scene, to, as Zach is talking, you have to picture it in Quentin Tarantino voice, and then it's okay.
Yeah, picture Quentin Tarantino with my voice coming out of his mouth. Next scene, you see her. She's in the elevator. She's dressed like a guy. She's got that cap on. She's got the aviator glasses. She's wearing the same jacket that Iceman wears. I think that's an interesting point. She is, okay, this is how I got to get this guy. This guy's going towards the gay way, so I got to bring him back. I got to bring him back from that way. So that'll do through subterfuge. I'm going to dress like a man. All right. And that is how she approaches. But okay, this is, it's almost done.
This is a really long monologue.
Yeah, it's a really long monologue.
I mean, you know, there's a YouTube video for it, too. I guess I could have played the YouTube video. But the real ending to this movie is when they fight the MIGs at the end, all right? Because he has passed over into the gay way. They are this gay-fighting fucking force, all right? And they're beating the Russians. They're beating the Russians, and it's over. And they fucking land, and Iceman's been trying to get Maverick the entire time, and finally he's got him, all right? And the last fucking line that they have together, they're hugging and kissing and happy with each other. And Ice comes up to Maverick and he says, man, you can ride my tail any way, anytime. And what does Maverick say? You can ride mine. Sword fight, fucking amen. And then the guy's review says all this and he doesn't even mention the beach volleyball scene. So that is a very long
line. The line is, you can be my wingman anytime.
Right. I do wonder about that.
I think it's hilarious, but totally, I have to disagree. I mean, it is super homoerotic movie, but like, nah, that's not the theme, man. And Fitzy, one thing.
That's what Tarantino does. I mean,
Totally Tarantino. But Fitzy, one thing you didn't mention was the relationship between Maverick and Goose, which is.
Oh, absolutely. That was one that I was gonna say, and then
But yeah, that's like a brother. That feels like a brotherly relationship to me.
Yeah, I mean, they're best friends, they're brothers, But that's what I'm saying is it's not just like they, but it's also a romance. I mean, it's a bromance movie.
Yeah, it made me sad. When Goose dies, that's of course spoiler alert. But like that's remember the first few times I watched that movie and it would like choke me up. And
this was your first time seeing it. What did you think that Goose was going to die? Were you expecting that?
No, I was shocked by that. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I thought it was a little weird that they just like assumed he was definitely dead. They're just like, all right, send his body up. hopefully he's really dead, because otherwise he's dead now because his head just like jerked six times on that rope as they pulled him up to the plane.
Exactly. Yeah. That was the one part that bugs the crap out of me every time is the let's just yank him up by the rope on a helicopter to get him out of there. Like, there's nobody checking him. There's no backboard. There's nothing like. They just go ahead and assume he's dead without any dialogue, and it's like that's the one part that I always kind of takes me out of it a little, even though the death is incredibly tragic, and like if you kind of forget about it, it is really unexpected. It's a brutal shot when he hits the top of the cockpit. Like,
yeah. So yeah, why did they have? I don't quite understand what happened there. Was it just that Maverick got too cocky there and tried a maneuver that then messed up the plane, and then they had to eject, and when they eject, and because Goose wasn't able to eject himself, Maverick had to eject, and then he hit his head on the top of the plane. Is that basically what happened?
Yes, the same thing that happens in almost every scene of this movie, which is that Maverick is a cocky asshole, who has no business being out there and does whatever he wants, and then bad things happen. That's pretty much what happens in almost every scene that involves flying in this movie, right?
Yeah. Pretty much.
And he's just doing that, like, well, I don't follow the rules, machismo.
Because he's
like, that's
a
good thing to do when you're in military battles or military exercises. You should follow the rules.
Although in this movie, they did absolve him of any crime, right? He flew in the guy's jet wash, which is an actual term it's a real term. And you can do that. It's like flying in the airspace behind another plane when you get caught in it. And it makes it almost impossible to control the plane. So, I mean, it is a thing that happens.
But didn't he only find himself in that situation because, like, he was doing something he shouldn't have been doing?
Well, in the movie they don't process. Yeah,
they don't really explain a lot.
That's part of the problem. Yeah.
I mean, of course, Maverick is always going balls to the wall. I mean, that's part of the "I feel the need for speed" quote, which has got to be one of the most quoted lines in any movie. That's just how he is, right?
Yeah. And I will say this movie is super quotable, very quippy. Like just when I was watching it, I was like, there was something I always write down a quote to open the movie with, and I wrote down about five or six different quotes that we could have opened the podcast with. You know, of course, there's like "Talk to Me, Goose." I thought about just writing down that entire intro text that comes on the screen, but there's a lot of good back and forth. It's very well written.
Yeah, this podcast is writing checks that our bodies can't cash.
Yep. If it's already mentioned, you can be my wingman anytime, right? Yeah, like,
what was interesting when I was reading up on the movie on doing some research is apparently, and you guys probably know this, Top Gun was like the first VHS, like in history, basically, that was like sold commercially and made available to the masses. VHS used to sell for like $90-$100, and they saw an opportunity that this would be the type of movie that people would want to watch again and again at home. So they lowered the price down to like $20 and did like a huge marketing campaign with a Pepsi commercial and tried to just like basically get everyone to buy it. And it was like by far the highest selling VHS of all time at that time. And it makes sense because like this movie is almost like a series of great scenes, like patched together around something that resembles a movie. Cause like, there's not really a plot to this movie other than the love story. Like, I couldn't even tell you what's going on at like Top Gun Academy and like what this competition that they're doing, and then somehow they're getting pulled into like a real war at the end. Strange.
Exactly. And that's what made introing this movie kind of hard. Cause it's like, okay, yeah, it's about like Tom Cruise and a whole bunch of 80s action stars, like at an academy. And then I guess they get attacked by, I think, the Russians at the end.
And the MiG-28, which is a plane that doesn't actually exist in real life.
Well, it was initially supposed to be North Korea, and the U.S. Navy said, no, you can't do that. Make them anonymous. We don't want to start an international incident from your stupid movie. So they made them make the enemy MiGs all be anonymous, which is why it's an anonymous spot in the Indian Ocean against an unnamed foe.
Yeah, I always assume the Russians, but
intentionally vague. Yeah,
that's why this movie is so timeless.
The whole idea or concept for the movie actually was from a picture that I believe Jerry Bruckheimer, one of the producers, along with Don Simpson, actually saw a magazine photo of a naval aircraft, and he thought it was amazing. And so they spent a few years trying to write a movie around this thing, and getting into the nuts and bolts of Top Gun, it's kind of amazing it actually even happened, because they went to Tom Cruise three or four different times to be the lead for this, and he turned them down every time. And the only reason he actually signed on for the movie was because I think Tony Scott and Bruckheimer called the Navy and wanted to get Tom Cruise up in the air, so to fly him around. So they did that. Tom Cruise barfs his guts out, but after he gets done, they said he goes over to a payphone, he calls his agent and says, "I'm doing the fucking movie. Let's do it."
Yeah, oh, he's an adrenaline junkie. I mean, just watch any Mission Impossible movie.
He got that need for speed.
Also learned how to ride a motorcycle for this movie. He had never ridden a motorcycle before. The only other person that I could find that was really in contention was Matthew Modine. And I know they highly thought about Charlie Sheen, but he was too young looking, which is kind of ironic considering Charlie Sheen goes on to make a parody of this movie.
Yeah.
That we may get to later. Oh. But, Tom Cruise was always pretty near the top of the list for this one.
And Tom Cruise in future interviews has said that his experience in Top Gun was the reason he became a pilot and started to do a lot of his own stunts in the first place, because there is real footage of him flying these planes. It's not all stunt doubles and Navy pilots. But I mean, that's pretty interesting, because if you think about actors who do their own stunts, Tom Cruise is probably at the top of the heap. I mean, his Halo jump, for example, in Mission Impossible, and the Burj Khalifa scene where he's scaling that crazy 2,000-foot
building. That makes my skin crawl. That scene, I love that movie just because that scene is so impactful.
Oh, it makes nuts shrivel up when I watch that.
And it's a good connection to Harrison Ford, who we've covered on the two last podcasts, because he's also well known for doing his own stunts as well. So.
Yeah.
Not a lot of actors do that, take those risks, but I always appreciate it more when they do. I think that's why the Mission Impossible series became successful, because not CGI.
Now, I think the rumor is that the next one he's going to film in space, or one of them he's going to film in space. Or
he's filming horse. And he's doing the stunts in space.
Yeah.
I mean, where can he go from here? He's done basically everything else. I don't know.
Yeah. And we've talked
over with Guardians of the Galaxy.
What? What about Guardians of the Galaxy?
I asked, is going to be like a crossover with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Probably. I mean, it's surprising he's never gotten into, speaking of the MCU, Tom Cruise has never joined any, has never played anybody in the MCU. Maybe someday. Yeah. I will say too, I don't usually think like flying scenes are that impressive, but I actually think the dogfighting in this and just the flight scenes, like when the planes turn upside down and things like that, like that actually was really, really fun to watch and visually was awesome. I was a big fan of the way that they filmed all of the action in this movie, and it held my attention. It didn't feel dated at all. And I thought it worked really well, much more than I'd seen this movie once before. And I remember the first time I saw this, I didn't really get what all the hype was about it. I couldn't get into it the last time I saw it, which was, you know, probably 15, 20 years ago. I didn't grow up watching this movie. It just wasn't one that we watched growing up. But this time I really enjoyed watching it. I thought it was, I was just really into it the whole time. It hit me at the right time. And I actually watching it, I was like, I would love to see this on like a big screen or an IMAX or something. I think, the TV just doesn't do some of these scenes justice.
Yeah, well, it's one of those movies I wouldn't mind seeing in a re-release in that like 4DX style where like the seats move and you can like feel the wind rushing against you and stuff like that. That would actually be really, really cool.
Totally. I mean, they in filming the movie, I know the Navy really, they brought in an admiral, or former admiral Pete Pettigrew to make sure that the scenes were realistic, because the Navy, you know, they're paying like on the order of like $10,000 an hour, the film crews were, to get the footage, but the Navy wanted it to be realistic, and so they brought this guy in, and you know, he was kind of going back and forth with the producers and the director. Because, you know, he's like, well, they're making a musical. They're doing all this. We want the Navy to be front and center. But in the end, you know, I mean, you can't argue with the results, because I think afterwards the Navy enlistments went up 500% in the years following just because of Top Gun, right? Like,
yeah, they actually had such a tie-in that there were theaters where they would have Navy recruitment tables set up outside of the screenings. And that led to, like, increases in people wanting to join the Navy. Because they come out of the movie so pumped up on, like, you're America, yeah, the military. And they, you know, I mean,
I'm surprised people didn't think that it was the Air Force.
Well, I mean, they make it pretty explicit that they're naval aviators. Because you have that, you know, scene with Tom Cruise in the bar where she says, you're a pilot. And he says, actually, I'm a naval aviator.
A naval aviator. He says it in kind of a condescending way.
Maybe you have some insight on that. I was wondering that too. So it's like, if you want to be a pilot, like, how do you end up being a pilot in the Navy? Like, I would think most pilots would want to join the Air Force, right?
My older brother who went to the academy would say, you flunked out of the Air Force Academy.
Okay. So they present this is like this elite group.
Right. The best fighter, the best pilots.
Yeah, and I think it's the top 1%. I mean, they explain it in sort of the first couple scenes of the movie, but that it's not. I think from the Navy.
It's tied a lot more closely to NASA. So there were several people that were stunt flyers on this movie that went on to become astronauts. So that's sort of the tie-in. Is they're more closely associated with NASA.
The Navy is more closely associated with NASA?
Naval aviators are. Than the Air Force.
Yeah. This is like, you know, anything military is way beyond my purview. Frank, you probably know more about that than I do, but.
Well, the Navy does operate some of the biggest aircraft contracts and programs out there. I mean, F-35, pretty good example of that, I think. I think that's the Navy. I'm going to have to fact check that. But there are several.
You'll get tweets. It's all right.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to look really dumb if I get that one wrong. But no, it was cool that they had – I mean, the Navy had a huge presence in the movie. And not veto power in decisions, but, I mean, they were definitely pushing for more footage and, you know, accuracy and in some of the meetings between pilots and stuff like that. I mean, there was a disagreement, I think, on the bathroom scenes, you know, when they take showers, because the Navy guy was like, no, they don't take showers. They just go out to the bar. But there's that really that scene that they scripted where all the guys are shirtless, Iceman and Maverick or John back and forth and Slider too. And he's like, that's right, Iceman. I am dangerous. You know?
Yeah.
And they really wanted those scenes in there. So the movie ended up getting the stuff that they wanted in there too, but maybe had a big impact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do think watching this movie actually, like, as I was watching it, there were times when I was like, actually, I think it would be really fun to be a pilot. Like, in my head, I'm like, what if I just did, like, a career change? Like, what if I just, like, became a pilot? Like, any kind of pilot. Not like a commercial jet, but, like, you know, doing this kind of stuff. That looks really fun.
My dad became a pilot around the time he turned 50, which I think is a fairly typical doctor midlife crisis thing to do.
Yeah.
He started getting, like, really into Flight Simulator, like that game on computer. It would just, like, stay up until the middle of the night playing it. And then without telling any of us, he started just taking flight lessons on Sunday mornings, like saying he was like going to work or whatever. He's like basically having an affair with his, pilot. And after like a year or 6 months, he like came home. He's like, hey everyone, I want to show you something. It's like, I'm a pilot. I have a pilot's license. And now he flies all the time. And he's like a little Cessna. It's not anything like this, but it can be done, Zach.
Uh-huh. So does he just like he just rents a plane, or does he did he buy a plane?
No, he owns a plane. They're not as expensive as you would think, although they are expensive. It's more like an expensive car than like a plane. It's like you can get one for like $90,000. So
okay,
not that they're not expensive, but like it's not like $1 million.
Right.
And he actually, a few years ago, he's a doctor, and he had a practice in New Jersey, and he sold it and then took a job like out of state. So he like flies up and like lives out of state now for the week, which he like has the flexibility to do. And like, it's just a lot more of a easy lifestyle for him. I guess he doesn't have to be around my mom all the time. So he likes that. it adds a lot of flexibility to your life. He's flown me, like, we've gone to like baseball games together, like in different states. Like, we went to like a Mets Orioles game. It took us like 45 minutes to get there. So it's pretty cool.
Oh, that's neat. So do you have to pay for parking? Like, I mean, it's not pay for, but you know what I mean? Like, you have to pay for like lot space or whatever.
Yeah. You pay to like dock it at like one of the, like, it's not a lot. Again, it's like, these are like small planes and like small airports. So it's like, it all sounds like very glamorous, but it's not. Like, it's just like a tiny plane. It's extremely uncomfortable. It's like very loud. It's not good.
Yeah. Like, has he seen this movie?
I'm sure he has. I should have asked him. Should have brought him on as a guest.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, let's get him on. Here.
A fact check too, that F-35 program does get funding from the Navy, also the Air Force. But in taking it back to Top Gun, the main aircraft there was the F-14 Tomcat, I believe, which was the planes that were flown throughout most of the dogfighting scenes, if I'm not incorrect.
That's kind of like the big triangular planes that they were flying, basically,
yep.
Right?
Yeah, one of the quintessential aircraft for the military for decades, really.
Yeah.
A couple of tidbits I wanted to hit on real quick while we're sort of talking about the Navy's involvement and how much work they put into making this film the way they wanted to. They were so heavily involved in the intricacies of all of the stunt work with the real actual flying. One crew member, one stunt pilot, actually died during filming.
Was it Goose?
And yeah, no, it's not Goose. So the movie at the end is dedicated to him. I had the name written down, and now I can't.
I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to disrespect him.
So the stuntman actually died, and it was really sad. But they kept going with it. But
Art Scholl is who died.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
There you go. Thank you, Scholl. So yeah, RIP Scholl, you gave your all to this movie, including your life, and we respect you for it very much. The other more fun fact about this, actually at the Top Gun Academy, anyone who is caught or overheard using a line from this movie while at that school receives a $5 fine.
That's the
most fun fact I found in the entire research of this film. And I thought that was fantastic because it makes so much sense.
Wait,
yeah, Fitzy. Of course they would get really annoyed. because they've probably been hearing it for the last 25 years.
At flight school, you said if they use a Top Gun quote, they get fined?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, if that was the case in real life, I would have been fined like thousands of dollars because I quote this movie with my friends all the time. And I've quoted it, I'm sure, around you guys over drinks numerous times.
What do you think is the line that is most worth that $5 trade?
Oh, boy. I have used Take Me to Bed or Lose Me Forever more times than I can count.
that sounds about right.
No points for second place. Target-rich environment. I mean, geez, anytime I go into a bar and there's chicks, I'd probably say that.
I have heard you say target-rich environment. I think I had no idea that's what you meant.
We're going ballistic. I mean, there's just tons.
Did you have the reverse of that? Like, when you were watching this movie, did you hear a line and you were like, oh, that's why people say that line? Like, it's a quote from this movie.
And you mean, yeah.
Well, because I've never seen this movie before. So, like, sometimes I feel like there's movies that are like those classic blind spots, right? And this was a classic blind spot for you. Have you ever had examples of times when you've heard a quote from this movie and you had no idea, and then you were watching this movie and you heard that quote and you're like, oh, that's where that quote comes from?
That didn't really happen because for example, the Need for Speed line is a line that I obviously heard a million times, but I knew it was from this movie. But it's like sometimes become like so just like part of the zeitgeist. And this happened to me when I was watching Casablanca, that like when he said the Need for Speed, I just like started laughing because it was so cheesy. I was like, why would you say like such a cheesy line from like an 80s movie? I'm like, all right. Like every time when I was watching Casablanca, every time he said, here's looking at you, kid, I just started cracking up because it's just like such a like overused, like cliche line that no one, like who would really say that to somebody? Yeah. Oh, the Need for Speed. Like, what are you talking about?
We'll always have Miramar.
Right. I do feel like Talk to Me. I hear people say Talk to Me Goose a lot. And I knew that Goose was from this movie, but like, it works better in this movie than it does in people quoting it. I feel like when people say Talk to Me Goose, like, what the hell are you talking about?
I think it does too. And for me, I one of my favorites is She's Lost That Love and Feeling. Damn it, I hate it when she does that.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. It's like a classic for me. I love that line.
That
scene is so good and story.
It's so cheesy, but when they like that was when I was all on for this movie. When the whole bar started singing, "You Lost That Love and Feeling," I was like, "All right, this is like I'm having fun. I am." I watched it yesterday. I watched it on Sunday afternoon, so I guess 2 days ago, right?
Crashed and burned on the first one.
Today's Tuesday. Sunday when I watched this movie, I was like, that movie came out. I was like, it's Sunday afternoon. I'm just having fun watching this movie.
It's like it was kind of an unfair bullshit scene because like it's not enough that he looks like Tom Cruise, like that should be like enough on its own. He also has like a team of 30 wingmen who are devoted to getting him laid.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I will say Tom Cruise was not a big enough star in this movie in order for them to hide how short he is. Once he becomes a bigger star, you do not notice how short Tom Cruise is. In this movie, it is like, especially next to Anthony Edwards, you're like, wow, Tom Cruise, you are tiny.
Well, to be fair to Anthony Edwards and Val Kilmer, they're both over 6 feet tall, I believe.
Right.
So and Tom Cruise is 5'7".
I believe Kelly McGillis is like 5'10 or 5'11", too. She filmed a lot of these scenes barefoot.
Yeah, she's 5'10".
But like Zach said, he didn't quite get the star crowd. I mean, his biggest movie to date before that was Risky Business.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that Top Gun did was elevate Tom Cruise to superstardom because, I mean, his career never slowed down after this movie, really. But I mean, he wasn't a huge, huge name at this point. And neither were a lot of other, a lot of the other cast. I mean, Kelly McGillis was, she'd been in I think Witness was the movie you guys have talked about.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
But then you had Anthony Edwards, who wasn't a big star. Meg Ryan, I mean, she was still 4 years away from When Harry Met Sally.
Right.
You had like Michael Ironside, Tom Skerritt, who are already veteran actors. Val Kilmer was years away from my favorite movie he's in, which is Tombstone. But I mean,
he had just done Top Secret, I believe.
Yeah.
And had Willow come out before this, or was that after this?
I think this was this elevated him as well. I'm not as much of a film buff as you guys. I can't recall a film he was in prior to it though.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, everyone after that, with the exception of Kelly McGillis, their career took off. Kelly McGillis, on the other hand, suffered severely from the rapid rise in fame. I mean, she fell into drugs and alcohol and
I didn't realize
was in AA, and yeah, and she was actually at the time she was making the movie, she was supposed to be in love with Maverick on screen, she was dating one of the other stars, one of the other guys.
Was she dating Edwards at that time?
No, it was Barry
Anthony
Tubb.
Edwards got together with Meg Ryan.
Barry Tubb, who was Wolfman, who was one of the other pilots in there, but one of the lesser known pilots. He was in the scene where you guys talking about where she's lost at Love and Feeling, and he was in a few of the other ones. But yeah, they were dating during the movie, which is kind of weird. They had to reshoot some of the scenes to make sure Cruise and McGillis had more chemistry. But yeah, I mean, geez, those career, who knows where those other actors' careers would have gone if they weren't in this movie, which ended up being the biggest movie of 86, top grossing movie. And then, as I've said, the biggest selling VHS for like decades.
Yeah. I wonder too, if that they did a really good job casting this, getting these up and coming stars, allowing them to spend more money on filming some of the flight scenes and some of the special effects that they needed for this movie, and not having to pay big name actors, because like you said, I mean, Tom Cruise had barely been in anything. Val Kilmer had barely been in anything. Anthony Edwards, I mean, the only thing I know him, yeah, he's in Revenge of the Nerds, which was 84. And really not playing that different of a character in this movie versus Revenge of the Nerds, I don't feel like.
They were busting the budget. I mean, there was an interview with Tony Scott, who you guys mentioned directed the film. I mean, a lot of people don't know he was fired and rehired three different times while making this movie because it got to taking a while. And getting scenes were tricky because the military was in charge of, I mean, the film crew was basically guests. So like on the aircraft carrier scenes, you know, they're not the film crews are not in charge of where those naval aircraft carriers are going. And there's a funny story he talked about in this interview a couple of years after the movie where he was looking for the right shot. Like the reason he was in the movie directing it was because he was known for these striking visuals. And he was looking for the right shot where you open the movie and you see these guys where they're flagging the planes and stuff. And it's got the perfect sunset in the background. They were on an aircraft carrier and it started turning around and he was about to have his perfect shot. And he calls them and he's like, I need you guys to turn back around. You're messing up my shot. And the guy just said no. And he's like, well, how much will you charge? I mean, how much will I have to pay the government to get you to turn around? And so he cut a personal check for $25,000 on the spot, which bounced. And the guy did turn around and they got the shots. But amazing, just amazing how hard it was to juggle. I mean, imagine the U.S. government, right? Like they don't want to give up control to film crews. But
right. Yeah. And Tony Scott, I'm just looking at his filmography. So he really hadn't done much before. I mean, he had done a movie called One of the Missing in 68, which I've never heard of, Loving Memory in 70, and then The Hunger in 1983, and then Top Gun in 86. And then a year later did Beverly Hills Cop 2 and then Days of Thunder. And then he started getting into
Then he really starts to take off with like the action movies. What's interesting, I read that they wanted to make a sequel right away or soon after, and they just like couldn't get cooperation with the military to like do it again. So their plan was to just like reuse old footage from the movie that like hadn't made it into the original Top Gun, but just like they didn't have enough to use, so they just couldn't make the movie. It's funny that they were like pinching pennies because they spent $15 million, which was a pretty big budget for 1980s, but they made $350 million at the box office and like another $100 million on the VHSs that we talked about. So they could have really put a few extra bucks to get this going.
So do we know anything about the sequel? I mean, I know it's called Top Gun Maverick. I think it's about Maverick's kid.
It's about
played by Miles. Oh, it's about Goose's kid. Okay.
Yeah.
And is it Miles Teller is playing Goose's kid?
That's my understanding, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, he's Miles Teller's Lieutenant Bradley Rooster is his nickname. Bradshaw, pilot trainee, and the son of Maverick's late RAO, Nick Goose Bradshaw. Jennifer Connelly is going to play Maverick's new love interest. John Hamm is in it.
Oh, John Hamm?
Val Kilmer will be back.
Which is kind of funny because Val Kilmer notoriously hated filming this movie.
He
didn't want to do it. And like he now like understands why this movie was important for his career and respects it, but he did not want to be in this movie.
When I was watching this movie, I had to ask Brennan if Val Kilmer was still alive. I feel like Val Kilmer is one of those people who I keep thinking is dead, and it's not Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer is not dead, but he just seems like he just kind of dropped off the map of the last few.
Yeah, and Val Kilmer is kind of the hero of this movie because he's the only one that actually calls out Maverick on his bullshit. Like,
right.
For some reason, like even like his superior officers just like kind of like yell at him in public, and then like Principal Strickland at the beginning where he's like, I have to yell at you, so I'm going to give you this whole speech.
I love that Principal Strickland is just playing Principal Strickland in this movie.
Yeah, because I really felt like the machismo and the brashness that Maverick puts on is like kind of a facade, because like he's like a big talker when he's on the planes, but then like when someone actually confronts him in person, like that veneer kind of like washes away. Like when Strickland is yelling at him, like he doesn't like stand up for himself. He kind of just like stands there meekly. Like when he's standing before that like judicial proceeding about like what's gonna happen to him, like he looks like a little puppy dog. Like, yeah. I don't know.
Well, I think he felt a lot of guilt at that point. I think he really, I think it was a big relief for him to be let off, not because he wasn't going to go to jail, but because, like, or be court-martialed or whatever, but because I think he felt a lot of guilt about Goose's death.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just think there's an extent to which he's, like, puffing his chest, but, like, when it actually comes to confront someone, he kind of, you know, hides away a little bit, that he's kind of just, like, putting on this act because, like, he thinks that's what's, like, expected of him to like be this like big shot.
And I think part of that, a lot of that comes from the conflict over the mystery surrounding his dad's death as a fighter pilot. And a lot of that also comes into play in the final fight scene where he starts to lose it and check it out and has to overcome his own mental breakdown in the moment to become the hero, quote unquote, at the end. Mm-hmm. But I mean, he definitely is dealing with a lot as a character, you know, and it's so, I mean, he is far more complex than his bravado would have.
Yeah. Really. And I do think that the scene between Tom Cruise and Tom Skerritt in this movie, Viper is the character that Tom Skerritt plays. I actually thought, like, and I'm sure I've seen Tom Skerritt in other things. I know I saw him in Alien and stuff, but he's one of those actors who just never really sticks out to me. But I loved him in this. He was just like a very comforting father figure in this movie. And I thought he was great. I think he was like one of my favorite parts of watching this movie. It was just his presence in this, I thought, was really good.
Yeah, the sort of second father that Maverick didn't have. I mean, there's a line in the movie about Maverick's always flying with a ghost up there, right? Which is his dad. I think that might be part of the reason that the explainer that Fitzy was talking about, where he's always going above and beyond, you know, pedal to the metal type thing. But I mean, you do see through the course of the movie he does learn some pretty significant life lessons. I also think it's a product of it being in the 80s, like the me generation, right? Like action movies were like, if I'm thinking of like Predator, you know, like those types of action movies were like, you know, the action is insane, right? Like everything is full throttle, whereas, you know, not all action movies are like that now. There's more nuance to it. But
well, and we talked about 90s action movies having a certain feel too, and 80s action movies definitely feel different than 90s action movies.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. One thing I think is a bit underplayed about this, though, is how good the soundtrack was. I'd love to hear.
Yes, I was going to bring that up. I definitely noted that. Talk about
I mean,
originally they wanted to get Toto, and they couldn't get Toto to do the soundtrack, so they got Loggins. And it's incredible. Like,
Frank, what do you got on the soundtrack?
I mean, Danger Zone, right? Like, good God. That song is still good. If I'm listening to it on Spotify, sometimes I'll take a screenshot and send it to some of my friends, just be like, you know,
we're in the Danger Zone in this movie?
I think so.
Yeah. It's awesome.
I will say
the TV show Archer has kind of ruined that, but also made that song even more amazing, because I always think about this gif where he's riding in one of those toy planes and doing like the devil horn, like rock horns, singing Danger Zone while riding in a toy plane.
Right. Yeah, there's that quote about from Archer, which is hilarious. But I mean, you got Great Balls of Fire, which they play in a really fun, cute scene.
Yeah, I love that scene too.
I love that. It's one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
When he's riding them, they're playing the piano to that song, right?
Yeah, Goose and his little boy are sitting at the piano, and then Meg Ryan's like, "I'd love to warn you off about Maverick, but I just love him so damn much." And you know, Maverick proceeds to embarrass himself with Goose and sing that song, which you know I memorized the words to it. You've lost that Lovin' Feeling, which you guys already talked about, an all-time classic. You've got Mighty Wings by Cheap Trick. I think you know, even playing with the boys, the volleyball scene, it's like ingrained in my head because I remember seeing that scene as a kid and thinking, oh, that's cool. And
that's going to be me someday.
And then, of all the songs in the movie, You Take My Breath Away is the one that was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Original Song.
And won, too.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, Berlin's song was, I mean, Take My Breath Away. Yeah, the first three bass lines of that song, you know what it is. And that, I do remember as about an 8 or 9 year old watching the sex scene that's in this movie, which I think is pretty graphic for an 8 year old to watch. And I was, you know, a little uncomfortable feelings when I saw that, but.
and it begs the question, does Tom Cruise know how to kiss? Because it looks like they're just like licking each other's tongues, which
I don't think that's what you're supposed to do.
Maybe I'm doing it wrong. I don't know.
Have you been doing it wrong your whole life?
I guess. I don't know. Yeah. I think I'm about that.
He's the only one on this podcast with kids, so must not be doing it too wrong.
Yeah, you're doing it while you're doing something.
You're thinking something.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's going to be like seared in my brain.
Statistically, I mean, it is one of the most popular soundtracks ever. I mean, it went platinum 9 different times, and I mean, shit, we know all the songs on that, right? Like,
right. Yeah. And I think, like, I've noticed, you know, I always notice movie scores, but movie soundtracks, I feel like the last couple months I watched Guardians of the Galaxy, which has also an amazing soundtrack.
One of
and
the
then
best.
I also watched Crooklyn recently, which is a Spike Lee movie, and also has a, like nobody talks about the soundtrack of the movie, but that's like a great movie, like lots of Motown songs, like very, very fun soundtrack in that. Mm. So, and I don't know how, you know, how many movies you get where they can just get like really good, songs to play that like are the perfect fit for the scenes. And this is one of them for sure.
Yeah. It's really hard. And it's also hard to have a soundtrack that has this many awesome actual songs, but also has a score that matches it just as well. Mm-hmm. Like the
score was kind of pulling from Danger Zone sometimes, Take My Breath Away, pulling from You Lost That Love and Feeling. Like there were chords that I was like, oh, I think that's from that song. So
yes, it's an incredible top to bottom musical film.
You know? And, I mean, Van Halen did one of the guitar riffs that's in Top Gun as well. I mean, they pulled out all the stops for that soundtrack. I think once they finally got a movie, you know, it took a while to get the movie right, but they went to work hard getting that soundtrack. And Fitzy alluded to it, but yeah, they wanted Toto to do Danger Zone, and then Toto said no. Then they went to REO Speedwagon second.
Oh, I missed the Speedwagon.
They said no. And then they said, well, Kenny Loggins had decided, you know, he might get a song in if he did the volleyball scene because he thought, well, no one's going to do this.
Right.
So they did Playing with the Boys. And then someone called him up and we're like, hey, can you also do Danger Zone? And he's like, send me the lyrics. And then, yeah, I think he did it all in one day.
Yeah.
Tweaked it a little bit. And then, I mean,
was this before or after Footloose?
This was after Footloose, I believe.
A year after?
Yeah. Okay, I think it was. So he, you know, he'd already had commercials.
Footloose is 84.
Okay, so a couple years. So he had a back-to-back movie hits with his soundtrack. I mean, there you go.
One little known fact, too, with Berlin, I mean, Take My Breath Away was such a gigantic song, like, you know, Oscar-winning, and I think it was the biggest selling song of 86. But it actually broke up the band because the lead singer from Berlin had an issue, I believe, with the bass player from Berlin about, you know, issues of, you know, the bass player didn't want to do a song that they didn't write and was mad that they were going to play this at every show ever for the rest of their lives. Mm. And she ended up going on her solo career after that because of this movie, because of the success of that song, which is,
I just assumed it was a Bette Midler song. Yeah. All right. So I think we can probably start moving into feedback. I think, you know, the three of us, four of us, all seem to like this movie, so we'll get our scores in a little bit. One thing I did note was I didn't notice how often they say Top Gun. And I always notice when they say the title of the movie in a movie. They did start a count, and by my count, they say this is not written, this is not on anybody's hat, this is just the word Top Gun appearing out of an actor's mouth in this movie. I counted 7 times that they say Top Gun throughout this movie.
I would have taken the over.
Yeah, I was actually – so it started off – I think there were 4 in the first half hour, and then there were more throughout. But and I might have missed a couple, but there were at least 7 times that they said Top Gun during this movie.
Nice.
So,
I like it.
All right, so I know we have feedback from people, and we've all been pretty positive. I'm going to bump up one feedback that we did get. So our friend Veggie Dog, Molly, I saw her Letterboxd review earlier this week, and I knew that she was going to be somebody who was not into this movie. And so I'm going to read her feedback first, and then we'll get into the other one. So then we can react to that. So Molly said, Top Gun is ridiculous. I know a lot of people love it, but I think it's cheesy and uninteresting. Kelly McGillis was so great in Witness, but she seems so wrong for this part. Tom Cruise has more chemistry with Val Kilmer than her. I think we addressed that.
So far, I agree with every word of this review.
The story is so basic and boring, and the dialogue is dumb. Do not agree with that. The only characters I cared about were Anthony Edwards and Meg Ryan. It does have a visual style and good use of music, so I'll give it 2 stars, I guess. So Molly nodded to this movie. You said you agreed with part of that. So, what is your reaction to Molly's?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to grade this as a movie because like it's highly entertaining, which is one of the main points of a movie. So like it gets all the points for that. It's iconic. You know, there are character names and lines and scenes and music that just have locked themselves into the pop culture in a way that very few movies do, and it gets a lot of credit for that. But I agree with her when it comes to like. The plot of this movie is garbage. Like, it doesn't make any sense. There's nothing to it, really. I didn't even understand, like, what was this competition that, like, takes up 60% of the movie. It almost becomes, like, a sports movie for a lot of it.
Yes.
And then you have, like, the big game at the end, except here the big game at the end is, like, a real battle. People are dying. So it's just, like, it's very uneven. I thought a lot of the dialogue is okay. Some of it is very cheesy, but a lot of that is just like this is a movie from the 80s that's going for a certain style. So like, what do you want? And one more thing to say that I can't remember. But yeah, I mean, there are scenes in this movie that are just like remarkably done. Like there's like 3 or 4 just like awesome music videos, I would call it. Like almost like, as we said before, like military recruitment music videos, and they're very effective. So like there are, you know, there's limitations to it, but overall I am going to give it a 4 out of 5, which is like that's a higher grade than like I expected to based on like the quality of the movie as a movie, but it's just so entertaining and there's so much just like fun, quotable, rewatchable stuff in there, and it's persisted this long in the culture for a reason, and I think that's apparent when you watch that. So
yeah, and we do have other listener feedback. So
That's
all right. No, we'll just.
I have a need for speed. I have to get to my review.
That's all right. So Molly gives it a 2. Avi gives it a 4. So we do have other feedback. And I will say too, like I did see some people's feedback that was like, I don't like how this movie is like so Reagan era rah rah America, like blind patriotism. I don't feel like this movie was like super patriotic. I mean, it was military, but I don't think it was any more patriotic than some other
movies. Yeah, because it's not like they're ultimately like going America, throughout the whole thing. Like, it's just like, I don't know. It markets very well to try to get you to join the Navy and want to be a pilot, but it's not like there's, when you become that pilot, you're storming into other countries and taking them over and saying, yay, America rules, we won. I don't think the movie's doing that at all. I do agree with some reviews I saw where it's sort of that dumb 80s movie that everybody loves, and some people resent it for that, but that's one of the reasons why I love it. Like, yes, it's a dumb, cheesy 80s movie, but that's what sort of appeals to it for me, like, because I grew up with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't want to step on all our other listener reviews and give my own review like I've just did, but
that's all right.
I think it's...
be a maverick.
You know, call me Maverick, because I'm goosing this right up.
nice. All right, let's read some other reviews.
And let's go to some other ones, and then I'll come back to me and I'll summarize.
All right, so we'll start with Jeff. This was Jeff's recommendation, so I would hope that he would have a good review of it. Jeff said, haven't seen it in a while. Glad you guys picked it. Not the best movie ever made, but it's very enjoyable. It holds up for the most part, even though it's from 1986. The action scenes and the flying scenes are so good. Some of the hairstyles are so 80s that it makes me laugh. I give it a solid 4. I didn't notice
all the top side, low, high fades. They're all military crew cuts, and that's,
Except Tom Cruise, except Maverick. He doesn't have a military haircut.
Maverick.
I did notice Maverick is very sweaty in a lot of scenes.
Well, it's San Diego in, July? So, yeah.
It did look like a nice place to live. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, people say San Diego is perfect weather. It looked pretty nice. So, all right. And so our buddy Dan, he responded and said, it's an all-time great film, killer cast, incredible flight cinematography, and one of the highest. The soundtrack went platinum 9 times, and he mentions the Toto thing as well. And I know he's a big fan of the song Africa, so he really loves Toto. The movie caused a jump in both naval enlistments and Ray-Ban sales. I give it a 5 out of 5 rating, but only because 6 was not an option. So, perfect score for Dan, 5 out of 5. Ray-Bans, yeah, Ray-Bans are probably having a jump now with the, all the Biden people.
Absolutely, yeah.
Buying those glasses again. So,
Ray-Bans, denim shirts, and flight jackets.
Bomber jackets, man, yeah. It's hard to find cooler looks, for the 80s than what they were. Those dudes.
It really is.
Yeah, I didn't think that the outfits looked super dated, to be honest. So
no, aged well, I think.
Because the 80s are coming back.
All right, so Olin wrote in, and he said that he watched the film with his wife earlier this year for the first time. Actually, it was a quite good film to watch together. Av, I think you watched this with your wife as well, right?
The first half. She fell asleep in the middle. She just falls asleep.
And you didn't watch it with your daughter, I'm assuming, right?
No. This is a nighttime movie.
Okay. Olin said, enjoyable watch, even though there was so much you can be picky about, the film largely delivers in what it wants. Also, giving out about the vagueness, example, who they were fighting in the Indian Ocean, wasn't their support effort effectively a failure? You can just have fun commenting during it and not worry about missing anything. Fun, fast-moving, very silly, and some decent performances. It felt basically like a high school type film that wasn't either cool or sexy teachers and some extra action. It did feel like a high school film to me. I agree with that.
Yeah, and I really like the sexy and cool teacher analogy too, because they had some really cool and sexy teachers for their nice little flight school between Tom Skerritt and Kelly McGillis and Michael Ironside and Principal
Strickland.
Skinner.
Strickland.
Sorry. Yeah. Those are all actors I would love to also have been people at my high school.
To be your sexy teachers in high school?
To be my sexy teachers, yes.
Yeah. So Olin also mentions that Anthony Edwards playing Goose was the heart of the movie for him. Mm-hmm. It did slightly lose interest after Goose's death. I don't know if I would say it lost interest for me. It just it got a little confusing at times, and then I was like, wait, there's a graduation, but he's not there.
It's a huge tonal shift.
And he also said he never rooted for Tom Cruise, but he was charismatic and fun to watch. He said, it's not a musical, but I did pretty much enjoy the soundtrack for the film, and the dialogue didn't really matter at all. So I guess I'm the only person who really liked the dialogue this week, because I thought it was very quotable. But the musical elements carried it. He says that's a compliment. He said his combined rating between him and his wife was 4.5 stars.
That's pretty high.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
We also didn't talk about connections to other movies, so we'll do that after we do our rating. And then we did get an email in from Jim right as we started recording. So Jim Crumley wrote in, and he said he's giving Top Gun 3.5 stars. The first half of the movie was a classic, so many lines that were junior high staples, and some excellent scenes. Second half of the movie really dragged after the leads consummate the relationship. I just think it got kind of bogged down, and it was there were scenes where I watched it, the scene between Viper and Maverick. I had to watch that twice because I didn't quite understand what he was telling him about his dad, and then the graduation scene, and then the final dogfight I thought was really exciting.
It's still really, really vague, the Maverick and Viper scene, to me. Even on the 15th, 16th time I've watched it, I still don't quite understand exactly what happened with his dad and whether even that is the truth. Or if he's just telling Maverick something he feels like he needs to hear in order to get him to perform. You know what I mean? I don't know, what he's telling, if what he's telling him is even what really happened. You know,
I assumed it was true. Frank,
what did you think?
I mean, on that specific scene, I assumed it was as well. But then again, I think it is fairly ambiguous, and I think it's probably intentional that way, right? It's less that they have to explain, but it is designed to get Maverick to perform and get his shit together, basically. It's sort of some tough love. And I it ends up being one of the scenes I really enjoy after Goose's death. I mean, I think the review, whoever came in, was it Jim or someone else that just came in that review? I do agree that the first half of the movie, the first two-thirds of the movie is so fun. And then Goose dying is always like the downer, right? It's pretty hard to recover from that. But still, I mean, if you want my overall take, I would just say probably one of the most impactful movies for me. When I saw it, I remember I was young, and then I remember watching it again in high school on an early date with a girl I had just started seeing. And like, you know, that movie became something important for me because like, it's an awesome date. And it kind of like when you're a guy in a small town, like, I don't know, you just get some kind of confidence watching that movie. Like all the dudes are confident. They're all super cool. Like it was kind of interesting to see because people didn't look like that where I was from. They definitely didn't act like that where I was from. And then, yeah, I mean, in terms of significance in my life for movies, I can scarcely think of three or four movies that had more of an impact. So I would definitely give it, you know, a 5 out of 5 just for personal impact and quotability. I mean, I still, maybe I'm showing my age here in my mid-30s, but I don't think there's any movie I've seen after that I've quoted more, even in my life today, all the time. So
yeah, I think the movie I quote the most is probably Wedding Crashers, but
that definitely shows your age.
Yeah.
I
think I would agree. I think it's a toss up between this Indiana Jones movies and Star Wars movies as to what I quote the most, but this definitely is up there for me for movies that I've quoted the most of my life. And it's definitely the soundtrack that has songs that I like that just randomly pop into my head more than any other soundtrack. It's got so many great memorable lines. I think I have to agree, like this movie also holds a very special place in my heart. My dad died in 1986, the winter after this movie came out. It was the last movie that he took my older brother to go see. I was supposed to go see it with them, and I got grounded.
Oh, no.
I got Maverick, and I didn't get to go. But that memory of missing out on this movie and missing out on seeing it with my dad, and then him dying shortly after, has always sort of stuck with me. And so this movie really holds a special place in my heart. And I love this movie. I love rewatching it. It's ultimately a really fun movie, despite the dramatic tonal shift we talked about with Goose's death. I think that I still have to give it a 5, despite some of the flaws we've also talked about, which I agree with, such as pacing and tone with a couple of things, and just the cheesy. The dialogue is cheesy, but it's at times is even intentionally cheesy, I think. I think it's still a 5 for me, though, so I got to put it a 5.
Can I add one more thing to it?
I must have
dressed as Maverick or Goose or both. Mm-hmm. Or the oiled up dudes from the volleyball scene at least 5 or 6 times over various 80s parties and Halloween. So I think
that's why you got the invitation to this podcast.
So gotta give it credit for that too. It's been an inspiration, which probably says a lot of bad
Leave
stuff.
Leave a wingman in town, Frank.
Didn't you have a motorcycle for a while too, or do you currently, or something? Why do I think about you in a motorcycle?
Yeah, I've been riding since like 2008, so quite a few years.
Yeah. All right. So, and I've already gave it a 4, so it's just up to me for my rating. And when I was watching this, I just, you know, right around that time with the "You Lost a Love and Feeling" scene, I was all in on this. I was excited. I didn't notice the tonal shift that much. I think you did need some sort of inspiration for Maverick's character to grow, and I think that worked. I like this a lot more than the first time I watched it. I don't know what it was. The first time I watched it, maybe I just wasn't paying attention or just, I don't know, I just couldn't get into it. I don't have the same nostalgia that Brendan and Frank do with this movie. I'm closer to Av in terms of I've only seen it once, and it was when I was like mostly an adult. I appreciate this movie. I think this movie is worth all of the praise and the hype and the rewatchability that people say. Yeah, it's not a perfect five for me just because it doesn't quite have the plot. I mean, when I try to explain what happened in this movie, it's kind of like, oh, they go to a school, sort of, and they fly some planes. But soundtrack, you know, quotability, and just the how excited I was watching it and how engaged and how much fun I had watching it. Like, this is a 4.5 for me. So I think this isn't quite the Golden Plate Club, but this is pretty close.
And, hand-holding club.
Yeah, hand-holding club. That's what it is. So 4.5 for me, 4 for Av, 5 for Brendan and Frank. The listeners average out to 3.8, so the listeners are a little bit lower than all of us.
So it's a 4.474 on the spreadsheet, which we're going to bump up to a 4.5. For the
4.5, yeah. So that's got to put it in I would assume that's in our top 10. We'll review our movies. Maybe when we get to 50 again, we'll review our top 10. But this is one of the higher rated movies I think that we've talked about. And it's we've talked about some really good movies on this list. So 4.5 is what we're going to average out to for Top Gun. One thing that we forgot to talk about earlier was we did not talk about connections between this movie and Frank. This might be a tougher part for you because this is where we connect the movie back to other movies that we've seen. So obviously Kelly McGinnis is the main connection back to Witness. Did you guys have any other connections to Witness from this movie that you noticed?
Not specifically for Witness.
I mean, the time that it came out, so this came out in 1986, Witness was 85, so came out pretty close together. Also, I would just say, like, you know, fun scenes with music in the background, which isn't a very solid connection, but there
is
the...
Fun scenes with music in the background? No.
Okay. What about any connections to other movies that we've talked about? Because I had a couple written down.
I had a couple. I think there are two obvious ones, and then one that is idiotic that I made up.
What's the obvious one?
Well, the most obvious is Collateral, because it had Tom Cruise as the lead.
Okay, yeah.
Point Break has, like, the jumping out of airplanes.
Oh, good. Yeah.
My last one is connecting to our Survivor podcast. There's one of the actors in this movie is named Ron Clark.
Oh, there you go.
I did notice that, and I wondered if that was actually Ron Clark.
No, it's not him. It's very much not him.
So a couple of connections I jotted down real quick. Everybody has a code name, like in Reservoir Dogs and in Taking a Pelham 1-2-3.
That's good.
So that was the first one that jumped out at me. What would all your code names be? I wrote that down as a follow-up question to this note. Do you guys have a call sign that you want to be called by?
I'm going to say Oak, because I'm sturdy like a tree and I'm drinking bourbon right now.
And you're from Okemos.
And I'm from Okemos.
Oak definitely fits you, Zach.
All right. Oak is my call sign. How about the rest of you guys?
Yeah.
Can't spell Maverick without Av.
See, just Maverick. Is that what you mean? No M, just Averick.
Averick.
Averick. Yeah. Averick.
I'd probably go with Tank or Cage.
I think it's definitely Tank. Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost too common though, Frank the Tank. People call me that without knowing me. So, yeah,
that's fair.
It seems like because when you call sign in the military, you actually get them assigned to you. You don't get to pick your own call sign.
Right.
You know, so a lot of times it's your flight instructors or it's your peers that end up giving you, you know, your call sign. So I imagine they probably would stick me with Tank. How about you, Fitzy?
Probably because my entire name is Irish, I'd be like Lucky. Or something like that.
Lucky's a good one.
Yeah. I think it'd be Lucky.
Oak can be our plane. You can be in the back. I'll be Lucky. You can be my Rio.
I would definitely rather be the radar guy than the pilot.
Oh, okay. I don't want to be the pilot.
I don't want to be the pilot either. Let me see. What else did I have?
I have some other connections as well while you're looking at yours. So,
yeah, go for it.
All right. So we didn't really talk about it, but there is a key bathroom scene in this movie. Which is kind of creepy. It's when Maverick goes into the bathroom after Kelly McGillis's character.
Carnal knowledge on the premise.
Yeah. And that actually connects back to Witness because there was a key bathroom scene in Witness. I don't know if Bob's going to veto that one as well, but I think that's a valid connection. But we've had a couple movies now with key bathroom scenes. It's almost becoming like trains. Reservoir Dogs had a big bathroom scene as well.
Yeah.
The Quentin Tarantino monologue that connects back to both Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and Reservoir Dogs, just in terms of like Quentin Tarantino clearly likes this movie and talks about this movie, wrote that monologue about it. The use of Polaroids in this movie connects back to Memento.
Yeah.
Tim Robbins plays a small role in this movie towards the end.
Oh yeah.
He's also in High Fidelity.
Yeah, and he's also in the very beginning because he's Cougar's.
Cougar.
He's Cougar's radar man.
Oh, he's the radar man. Okay, he's
yeah, he's Cougar's radar man. Yeah. So he's in the very beginning and the very end.
And then the other one that I wrote down, so this took a little bit of digging. So this movie is written by a couple writers, but two of them, Jim Cash and Jack Epps Jr. Okay. And they both also wrote Dick Tracy.
Oh, interesting. Oh.
And the actor who plays Principal Strickland apparently is in Dick Tracy. I have no idea who he plays in
Random Dick Tracy.
Yeah, he must be one of those random gangsters. So that is his name is James Tolkien. So that's Principal Strickland guy. It looks like he still looks the same. So I guess that guy's never had hair. He's also in Dick Tracy. I'm just trying to see if I can find out who he was.
Vague connection to both the Full Monty and Magic Mike in the volleyball scene. Shirtless dudes, you know.
Oh, true. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Shirtless sex symbols. What else? I don't think that's about it.
Yeah, Frank, do you have any connections to movies that we've covered on this podcast? I know that would be
great. I was thinking of one that this might be a connection for, and that just based on Val Kilmer's presence and the extreme machismo, and I wondered if you guys had done one on Tombstone, because I think
we haven't yet, but that could be coming up in the next couple minutes.
The Top Gun's probably Val Kilmer's most well-known movie, but I think his actual best role was Tombstone, and I think that...
Not Batman?
Tombstone. I mean, you guys have seen Tombstone, right?
I have. Several
Brendan. I have.
It's a favorite. Yeah.
Oh man, Doc Holliday. I mean, that performance is one of the best that never got record. I don't think it got full recognition.
Yeah.
And I was gonna also suggest. I mean, because this movie was when Tom Cruise first started learning to do his own stunts and getting a sort of a liking for it. I thought any of the Mission Impossibles would probably suffice, but there's so many of them now, like six. I don't know what one you pick.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into connections because we got a bunch of connections from the listeners, and then we'll do our connections, and that'll give you a little bit of time to think which Mission Impossible you want to pick for us. I actually have a suggestion if you want that suggestion. So for which Mission Impossible. All right. So with that wraps up our discussion about Top Gun. Let's now move on to our listener connections for our next movie. Of course, these are going to be connections for something, anything that connects to this movie. That'll be the next movie that we will cover on this podcast next week. Once we do pick it, definitely email us at theladdermovie@gmail.com or at laddermovie on Letterboxd and Twitter. Let us know your thoughts on the movie that we pick, as well as connections off of that movie, and we'll discuss it next week. All right, so for our listener connections, Jeff wrote in with three. He's based on the Tom Skerritt connection. He suggested MASH. It's also a military movie. And then he suggested two with Tim Robbins. So not High Fidelity, but he did suggest Shawshank Redemption and Bull Durham. Both.
I think it's a little hard to go with Tim Robbins on this movie just because he's in it so little.
Yeah.
It's such a it feels like a weak connection, but I appreciate the push to get us to watch those two movies because I do like
I've never seen Bull Durham. I know I've just watched it probably for the sports movie bracket, or at least they talked about it on their OB pod. So speaking of Av, his wife, Rachel, wrote in. The rare Rachel Sinensky movie ladder suggestion, and she suggested Risky Business, Tom Cruise in his underwear. So,
good call.
Yeah. All right. Does that mean that she listens to this podcast?
Oh, no way.
She just wants a reason to watch Tom Cruise in his underwear with you, basically.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All right. And Molly. So she had a couple. So she suggested Caddyshack because of the Kenny Loggins soundtrack connection. Caddyshack just covered on the Rewatchables today, so that would be fun. Also, Flight, that stars Denzel Washington. It's a movie about a pilot. I liked Flight quite a bit. I thought that was a very good
movie. I never saw it, but it's one that I've been meaning to check out.
I watched it when I lived with you. I guess you must not have been around.
Yeah, I must not have been home that day.
She also suggested The Doors, that stars both Val Kilmer and Meg Ryan. Oh, that's a double connection. And Stand By Me, because that came out in 1986. I bet there's
probably a great soundtrack.
Yeah, also has a great soundtrack. All right, so Olin, he suggested, because of the Val Kilmer in the 80s connection, Top Secret from 1984.
It's another movie that starts with the word top.
Oh, good point, yep. movie about the American Air Force. Well, this movie wasn't about the American Air Force, Olin, but he suggested Wings from 1927.
Whoa, bringing it back.
Yeah, I'm assuming he said unlikely to be chosen, although it might be on Oscar winner watch list.
Is Wings the first Oscar winner?
One of, if not. I believe that he says it is.
This is the first ever Oscar winner for Best Picture, yes.
Best Picture, yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Is Wings streaming anywhere?
Criterion, probably.
Yeah, probably Criterion. Or YouTube.
It's, you can watch it. You can rent it on YouTube.
All right. And then the other one, done. Film with a large focus on the training of American military forces, that is Full Metal Jacket, Stanley Kubrick's Vietnam film. So... and then just getting in under the wire, Jim Crumley suggested The Doors with Val Kilmer. Yep. So, and he also says that because it takes place in Southern California, so there's that connection. And Jim Morrison's father was an admiral in the Navy. So
interesting.
All right. Okay, so we have now our host connections. I think Frank will let you go first. I know you already suggested Tombstone. Have you picked a Mission Impossible movie, and do you have any other connections to suggest?
I was thinking if any Mission Impossible Fallout was the most recent one, and it also has – it probably has Tom Cruise's best stunt or among them where they do the halo jump from the cargo plane, which he did like dozens of times to get that scene right. And also it's got Henry Cavill.
Incredible bathroom scene.
Oh, yeah. I mean the fighting – yeah.
It does have a bathroom scene. So I was going to suggest Mission Impossible 2. Only because we get a lot of Tom Cruise riding a motorcycle in that movie. But Fallout is a better movie than Mission Impossible 2.
So. I agree. I also thought when you guys were talking, A Few Good Men, another Tom Cruise connection with the military. Good movie.
Yep, that's great. But
he's
great
in the Navy in that one. So.
Yeah.
He's the Navy.
Yeah. Yep. And there's a courtroom scene in it as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like adjudicating the behavior of someone or two people who don't really follow the rules and what do the rules mean in military context.
All three movies that I love. So.
All right. Who wants to go next?
Yep.
I will go next. I am coming
back. I have one movie that I'm predicting that you're going to pick, so I'll just see if I'm right.
All right. I'm coming with four suggestions. As hinted at earlier, I want to throw in the Charlie Sheen parody comedy Hot Shots, which is a direct parody of Top Gun, starring Charlie Sheen, who was almost in this movie. I am also going to pick the Jerry Lee Lewis biopic starring Gary Busey, Great Balls of Fire.
Oh, good.
That's a good connection.
I'm also going to pick the movie that came out last year that I really wanted to see that's about a U.S. naval battle taking place in the Pacific called Midway. And I didn't see it. It came out last year. I really wanted to see it.
Wasn't that – what's his name that does all the disaster movies?
It's a disaster.
Roland Emmerich. Yeah.
It's an Emmerich movie. And the fourth one is a movie that Zach and I talked about earlier this week in our G-Chat, which no one else is privy to except Mac. But I'm going to go with another Meg Ryan movie that came out a year or two after this that stars Meg Ryan with a different Tom, and that's Joe versus the Volcano.
Oh, not where I thought you were going. Okay. not the Meg Ryan Tom. Oh, man.
Joe versus the Volcano.
Oh, I love Joe versus the Volcano so much. All right, well, the movie that I predicted you were going to pick was Maverick, Brendan.
It was on my short list.
Yeah,
and I didn't pick it because it's come up before and we already rejected it, but it was the most obvious choice that I didn't go for. I wanted to go for some different stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, so I'll go next. I had 8 movies written down. I'm not going to bring all 8.
I had kept writing down movies.
I was like, oh my god, this is a good one. So I'll go through them all. I'll go through the ones that I'm not going to suggest. So Maverick was one. But I wrote that down, and I wrote in parentheses, Brendan will pick this. Now it's hard to actually – now that for the remaining 7, it's kind of hard to narrow these down. I guess all right. What don't
Maybe
I want to
Maybe
she keep
Maverick in there then.
All right. So I had Edge of Tomorrow as another one. I'm not going to suggest that. But I highly recommend Edge of Tomorrow. Edge of Tomorrow is very fun. And that's Tom Cruise in a military battle. So – Oh, I have one movie written about Troy. Okay, that's easy. All right, so I had True Romance written down twice, so I will put True Romance on my list. Tony Scott movie written by Quentin Tarantino. I think there were some cast connections as well. I've never seen True Romance, though. It's supposed to be good. The next one I'm going to suggest is we talked about how this is a high school movie. It's a sports movie. It's a movie with a group singing song. I actually thought the song was the same in both movies. It's not. They sing Ain't No Mountain High Enough in this movie. So I'm going to suggest Remember the Titans.
Good one.
And then let's see what else. Brennan already suggested a Meg Ryan Tom movie, and I thought it was Seattle, and he didn't. I had Sleepless in Seattle on my list. I'm not putting that on here. Just because I think it would be fun to watch this movie, I will also add Willow. Which has Val Kilmer, and it's from the 80s. And I haven't seen Willow in a very long time. I'd be curious to watch Willow in a post Game of Thrones world.
Yeah.
And the last one I will suggest is another Tony Scott movie about the military, about the Navy, about the water, that is Crimson Tide. Never seen Crimson Tide.
On my list. He sunk my battleship.
Good response. So,
I recently watched Crimson Tide like a couple months ago. On a random day because it came up on the Stupid Rewatchables podcast.
It did.
So, yeah.
So True Romance is also been on Rewatchables.
Yeah, that's also true. But I did already sink that battleship pretty recently. But go ahead. What you got?
So I had one written down, but then Zach said he had just seen it, and that was The Hunt for Red October. So we can take that off my list. Although that's a movie I've never seen, so I was actually...
I like quite a bit, but I don't really want to watch it again. But
yeah, you don't want to watch it again. That's fine. My second movie, well, we'll say my first movie because we're going to Nick's Hunt for October. We're going to stay in San Diego, or San Diego.
Oh, nice.
Some might say it, and we'll go with Anchorman for our first choice. My second choice is a Tom Cruise movie that I saw... But I was like, I guess 15 at the time. So my aim for seeing it would be different than now when I've been told that this is actually a great movie. And that is Stanley Kubrick's final work, Eyes Wide Shut.
That's been on my watch list for a while.
Yeah, which I would like to rewatch because I've heard that it's actually like a really interesting, complex movie that I was not focused on. Because...
Yep, same. And going back to Anchorman, Tim Robbins does have a small role in Anchorman. Also.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And for my last choice, I'm going to go with the remake of the movie that we did about 20 or 25 weeks ago, the Tony Scott adaptation of The Taking of Pelham 123.
That's another connection to this movie. That's like a real circular logic. I don't know if you remember, but when we did that podcast, I did watch The Taking of Pelham 123 remake in addition to the original for that podcast, and I did talk about the remake. It's that would be funny.
That's funny.
All right. So I'll just go through what we have, and then each of us. So usually we only have three movies that make the final. We will have a final four this time. So we're twisting up the game, because Frank, you're gonna pick one also to make the final. So our choices to pick from: we have MASH, Shawshank Redemption, Bull Durham, Risky Business, Caddyshack, Flight, The Doors, which was suggested twice, Stand by Me, Top Secret, Wings, and Full Metal Jacket. And for the host connections, we had Tombstone, Mission Impossible Fallout, A Few Good Men, Hot Shots, Great Balls of Fire, and Midway, Joe versus the Volcano, True Romance, Remember the Titans, Willow, Crimson Tide, Anchorman, Eyes Wide Shut, and Taking of Pelham 123. All right, so we go in reverse order, which means, Av, you get to go first with your pick.
I will go with the listener suggestions, and I will go with The Doors, which has been on my list for many years.
All right, suggested twice by both Jim and Molly.
Yeah,
I feel like the two of them have been a combo in the past.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, they're on lockstep. We won't tell your wife that you didn't pick her suggestion.
Am I allowed to? I didn't even know what the etiquette is.
I think you could pick your wife. Right, so you can't pick your own.
This could be a good way for me to backdoor my own choices and just have her say.
Oh, yeah. No, never mind. No loophole. yeah, Frank, that's the one rule. You can't pick for this finals one of the movies you suggested. It has to be somebody else's suggestion.
Oh, I wouldn't do that.
Let's see. So, I want to pick one of my own suggestions.
Yeah, I know, right?
Let's see. So you pick The Doors. I'm gonna pick Eyes Wide Shut. I think that's gonna be an awkward movie to podcast about, but I've been wanting to watch it for a few years. So, yeah, it's got time.
Kubrick is always good for a nice podcast discussion. I just don't know how podcastable this one would be. But I mean, it could be fun. I don't know. We'll see.
Why not? Where are we going?
All right, Brendan, your pick.
Oh man, this is really hard. I could pick any of the three on Frank's because they're all amazing. And I was gonna do The Doors if Av hadn't, because two listeners suggested it. I've actually never seen MASH. And I'd be really interested to, because apparently it's supposed to be a comedy, it's supposed to be really good. And it's about the least talked about war, the Korean War. I'll pick MASH. It can be good.
People are talking about the Korean War more and more these days, actually.
They are. People are talking.
Susan B. Anthony and the Korean War are the two things people are talking about more and more.
You know
these
what? No. You know what? Audible. I take it back. I'm picking something from Craigslist.
Good. We're definitely not picking MASH. Just
you get Men or Tombstone. Yeah. MASH is coin. If you get Men or Tombstone. I think I have to go with.
You love Tombstone. Oh,
Tombstone so much, and I have to pick it. I just have to, because it would be really, really fun. And yes, I have to pick Tombstone. It's there. So we
do a few good men, then I have to open the podcast with You Can't Handle the Truth, and it's so
yeah,
shit.
Yeah. Then it just gets awkward.
All right, Frank, how about you? Go ahead and pick a movie from these that we talked about.
I think one of the listener's suggestions that resonated with me was Full Metal Jacket. Just because it's entirely different view of military service.
Yeah.
Two Kubrick movies on this list.
Yeah, it's just a great movie. I haven't watched it in a while, but that's one of the ones that makes you think, too.
Yeah, I haven't watched it since I took a Kubrick class in college, and I haven't seen it since then, so it's probably been about 20 years.
Yeah. All right, so we have, for our final four, so we need to pick... between The Doors, Eyes Wide Shut, Tombstone, and Full Metal Jacket. Does anybody have any strong leanings? I could go with any of these four, per usual. Av, do you have any thoughts?
No, I'm good with all four of these. These are all movies that I'd be interested in seeing.
All right.
Four movies you haven't seen?
No, I've seen Eyes Wide Shut is the only one I have seen, and I didn't really see it.
The Doors is on Amazon Prime. Eyes Wide Shut is nowhere. I mean, you can rent it, but it's not anywhere free. Tombstone and Full Metal Jacket, I'll look up real quick.
Tombstone is not free.
All right. Tombstone is not anywhere. Tombstone and The Doors are both 1993 movies. That's fun.
Yeah. And I believe Full Metal Jacket is on Amazon.
Full Metal Jacket is on HBO Max, so you can't see it.
Get to Roku. Nobody's talking about the fact that it's still not on Roku.
Yeah.
All right, so... based on streamability and that it was two people's suggestion and Brendan was going to pick The Doors, I haven't seen her in a long time. I feel like we should go to The Doors.
I don't mind going to The Doors. I mean, I've heard it hasn't aged well, and that intrigues it for me. But, you know, and also it's set in San Diego.
Even better.
Yeah, I mean, it's got multiple connections. I think it's our strongest connection. Could be really fun. Yeah.
And
I
mean, it looks like it's on Prime, it's on CBS All Access, and it's on Canopy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we haven't done a music movie yet, right? I mean, we've done some military movies. You know, this would be our first real rock band history movie.
And he's like anti-military, isn't he?
Yeah.
We'll find out.
Yeah. All right, so we're doing The Doors next week. It is streaming on a ton of places, including Amazon Prime, Canopy, and CBS All Access. The connection there, Val Kilmer's in it, Meg Ryan's in it, it takes place in San Diego. Crispin Glover's in it as well. Frank, have you seen The Doors?
Nope, I haven't.
I wonder if had he seen that it's 2 hours and 20 minutes. That might have deterred him. But
congratulations, listeners. We truly are a podcast of
seriously, this is five in a row for the listeners. So the listeners now have suggested five movies in a row that we've picked.
It's disappointing in you, man.
A podcast for the people.
All right. So yeah, the Doors. I would not have thought Top Gun to the Doors. That's not where I thought we would have been going. But
I'm fine with it. We'll have a
very fun showing from everybody. All right. So we're gonna start closing this thing out. Av is quiet right now because he is recording his other podcast. I think pretty good with Alexander Chester, where they're going through every episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. They are up to the finale of season 3, I think.
Season 3, episode 9 now.
Let's see. So they just did. I don't think I've watched their last episode yet. Let's see.
If it's 10.
So yeah, season 3, episode 9 of Curb. So do you know what that is off the top of your head?
I don't, because I just remember that it was 2 weeks ago that I listened to season 3, episode 7.
So. Yeah, so it is Mary, Joseph, and Larry is what they are talking about. So it is the penultimate episode of season 3. So Frank Av has a podcast where him and another very interesting podcaster are going through every episode of Curb Enthusiasm and talking about each one. So are you a Curb fan, Frank?
Oh, I saw a few episodes sparingly here and there, you know, but I never got it. The ones I saw were funny, but I not enough to offer a whole lot of opinions.
It's a funny show. If you're ever looking for something, it's, you know, if you like that Seinfeld awkwardness. So, you can follow Av at Asinensky on all platforms, including Letterboxd and Twitter. So, check out pretty good. All right. And Brennan, where can people follow you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at FidzyBrennan or on Letterboxd at BrenFids11. Lots going on over at Post Show Recap, so make sure you check that out. Other than that, nothing really going on. Just taking it one day at a time. How about you?
All right. And Frank, thank you for joining us. You were our first, like, my brother guested, but he guested in place of Bob. You were our first, like, fourth person on the panel. So it was fun to have another voice. You brought a lot of expertise about Top Gun. So glad you were able to join us.
Years of experience. No, I'm happy to do it. Man, classic movie. If you ever need a guest for another one of these, I'd love to do them.
I was thinking it would be fun actually to have, like, a guest that – like, because you're not as much of a movie guy as we are. I mean, you love Top Gun, but you haven't seen as many movies as us. You're more of a, like, you do stuff versus watch stuff. So I was like, it would be funny to have, like, a podcast where we bring somebody on who doesn't watch very many movies, and the only movie they watch every week is, like, whatever movie gets picked by this podcast, and then they just come on, and they're like, they have, like, they're not coming from, like, a film perspective. They're just coming from, like, a, like,
I really love
what
this
did you think
movie.
Of that? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe we'll have to have you on for another movie sometime.
I like that.
Yeah, well, thanks for the opportunity. I had a blast shooting the bridge with you guys. And it's good to see you.
Right.
It was almost been a few months since we all hung out. So this is a great way to do it.
Do you want to plug anything? What are you doing these what's up in your world these days?
I mean, anyone who wants to can follow me on Twitter at Frank_Konkel, KONKL. I've been doing the journalist stuff these days, man. I mean, just covering the government, covering the military, covering the Trump administration. So if you're interested in news, that's what I do. But otherwise,
it's a very educational Twitter feed. You should follow him.
Actually, it's classified.
It's classified. I could tell you, but I have to kill you.
Yeah. So. It's not what you do, Dad. It's like the ring. So. So yeah, he's at we'll tag him in the tweet for this, but he's at Frank_Konkel, KONKEL, as he said. And I'm at Brooks ZA. This is the only thing I got going on podcast wise these days. But we will be back next week. If you want to follow the podcast again, at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Letterboxd, themovieladder@gmail.com is where you can email us. So let us know your thoughts on The Doors by Oliver Stone and where we should go next. Let's get some connections off of The Doors. And we can see what we come up with next week. When we talk about it again, you can stream it on lots of platforms. And hope that you're able to watch it and then join along with us. Thank you, Frank, for joining us once again. Thanks Brendan. Frank. Thanks, Av. We will talk to you next week for The Doors.
Take me to bed or lose me forever.
Show me the way home.
You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. day is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre. Come away, the light.